Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I am your host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. And right now, I have with me a special guest who's got me, like, really thinking about a certain end game of a movie right now. Because a previous conversation. Go ahead and introduce yourself, good man.
Hey, what's up? This is Brandon T. Snyder. I am a writer and actor. I wrote the Infinity War Cosmic Quest series, the Dark Knight Manual, and I do lots of books for young readers for DC, Marvel, and Cartoon Network.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. See, that's just like childhood right there. It's like in Cartoon Network, like DC, Marvel, Cartoon Network. It's like, hey, you want childhood? Yeah, here you go.
I've got a little bit of something for everyone.
That's true. Oh, I'm a jack of all trades.
Ooh, I like, try.
Yeah.
I can't dance. And I can't play the drums.
Not yet, anyway.
We'll see.
Yeah. Well, welcome onto the show, and it's an absolute blast to have you here. And we just had like a 10-minute conversation about Endgame right before the recording. I just look at the time, I'm like, oh god.
I mean, it's like it really is. It's like an emotional. It's just a lot to. It's a lot to process. It's 3 hours of stuff. That is the culmination of so many things. So it's like, I'm going to be thinking about it for days and just trying to move through my emotions.
Oh, yeah. And it's the feels, folks. The feels.
Absolutely.
Now, you are a writer now, by chance.
Yes.
And
correct.
Yeah. I was like, if he says no, we're in trouble. I'm curious here because I like to ask people, what is the inspiration, like, what was the hope, the inspiration sort of thing that got you, because everyone has that, like, kind of a little bit of a moment here, or moments, that showed you what, that you want to be a writer, that you want to do this for a living, or at least try to do this for a living, and what was that kind of moment for you, Bren?
Well, so I, like, writing for me when I was a kid was very personal and private. I used to make my own comic books, like, and you know, like, where I can't draw worth it, anything, but I would draw and make my little, these little comic books, and that was sort of, like, my beginning. I was very influenced by comic books and superheroes and things like that, that kind of storytelling, and so as I got older in junior high, high school, college, I wrote, but I didn't share it with anybody. I wrote for like the school paper, and I wrote for the yearbook and stuff like that. But as far as other more personal things, it was really just for me. And then in college, I started to develop my skills a little bit more. Never with the intent to become a writer. That was always something, sort of a pipe dream. I went to college for theater and graduated with a degree in theater and moved to New York to be an actor. And I still am, but one of the things that, you know, moving to New York, I was under the impression as a very young person that, yeah, I'm going to move to New York, get an agent, and this, everything's going to be great. And, you know, it's not easy to be an actor in New York. So one of the things that fed me creatively was writing, where I wasn't being necessarily fed creatively as an actor. And so I had a very conscious moment. I was taking improv classes and and performing with an improv sketch group and developing my skills as a writer. Because when you're doing sketch comedy, you're also just writing more and more, and you're tossing things out. I used to write things and be like, this is brilliant, I love it, but I wasn't being hard on myself, and I didn't have a group of friends who were critiquing me. Everything I wrote was a thing, as opposed to writing and being like, no to this, yes to this. So working with an improv sketch group was something that helped me become a better writer, and I learned a lot of lessons. But I had a very conscious moment where writing took on a different shape, and it became something that I really was like, you know, I think I need to develop this skill more and in a much more serious way. And so I then got, in doing more improv and sketch comedy, I graduated kind of to like writing short plays. And a friend of mine, who's a voiceover actress and in California. Well, now she lives in California, but her name is Carrie Karenin, and we were very close friends, and we are very close friends. She's one of my best friends, and we decided to put together a show of one-act plays that we wrote, that we produced, directed, acted in. It was a huge undertaking, mm-hmm. and but it was sort of the growth of it was like, you know, we've been developing skills and now finally have this, like, are really honing in on a voice. And from that, an editor saw that I did a short play about, like, it was kind of like a funny superhero thing. Like, I'm trying to think what I can. There was a couple comic books that were sort of similar to the vibe, but it was just like people, like superheroes with funny names who, like, didn't have the best powers, trying to, like, do something. Anyway, but somebody saw it, liked it, passed my name to an editor, and I got a job writing on a Fantastic Four movie sound storybook.
Ooh.
And it was, at the time, I was like, this is, like, an isolated incident. Like, this will never happen again. I'm so excited. But, like, I still wasn't to a point where I thought this could be something sustainable for me. Mm. And then it just, like, grew from there. I did that work. That editor liked the work that I did, hired me for something else, passed my name to somebody else. And you know, that was in 2005.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's a time jump.
Yeah, sorry. So that was like 2005, and things, I don't want to say snowballed and make it seem like it just went from 0 to 60, but over, you know, I started to do good work and focus on learning the lessons every time I got a new job about, you know, how to put story together in different ways, and especially writing for younger audiences. And so that's sort of like my origin story, and I've been able to, I've been supporting myself for the past 7 years as a full-time writer. Before that, I was doing a lot of, you know, I had day jobs and temp jobs, mm-hmm. and things like that. Yeah. And I got a job writing in 2012 that allowed me to just sort of say goodbye to that day-to-day temp jobby sort of thing. And it's been an uphill battle at times, but I really am very lucky to have had the opportunities that I've had to do the kind of stuff that I did.
Oh yeah, and it's not like you haven't worked hard for it, you know, like hearing that is 100% you're working hard, you're dedicated to the cause and everything else, and then getting to that point where you can say bye-bye day job, which is I'm working on now, being in a whole boatload of film, all this other stuff,
yeah.
And trying to be able to do that is something people really go for. And like, so all of our listeners out there, I mean, Brandon, you're telling the truth of, like, it takes time. You can't be like, here's a year and bye. No, it takes a couple years. It takes a lot of work. And you're out there, yeah, hustling. You're going for it in the trenches. Like, I fucking love that. That's amazing, man.
Well, you know, I also think you have to be able to grow.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to grow, and you have to be able to measure that growth and understand. You know, you have to, like I said, like, there were times where I thought everything that I wrote as a much younger person, I thought were great. Mm-hmm. And I read those things now, and I'm like, who do you think you are? Because it was like a, yeah, different time in my life, and it was a good, you know, I wasn't measuring progress, personal progress or professional progress, the same way. I was sort of like, I thought at the, you know, in college, I used to think that, and I think a lot of young writers maybe think this, that you write from inspiration and you create something and then that's it. It's like, I made a painting, and there it is, as opposed to, I made a painting and I'm going to go back and fill in some blanks and color, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to actually paint over this, and I'm going to cut it in half. Like, as a writer, you don't just create brilliant works and then that's it. You have to be able to look at them with a critical eye, and you have to be able to, A, you know the story that you're telling, and then be able to look at it and really pick it apart and ask, am I telling this story effectively? Mm. And, you know, where have I put everything in this story? And it's hard to do, especially when you love something so much, and the process might be different for you. You know, it's hard to do those things, and it's hard to get clarity. I often, with anxiety and all kinds of other things, like, it's hard for me to get clarity. So that's why it's really important for me to also work with editors who know me and know what I am trying to do, that I can, turn in something and they can say, okay, I see what you're doing, but I think maybe we change this or add this or whatever. And I can ask very specific questions, because for me, clarity on certain things, it's like, is can be very hard won. Yeah. So yeah, it's important to just like recognize the lessons and all these things. And everybody is, impatient as far as success and visibility and that sort of kind of thing. But focus on growing, focus on growth, focusing on honing in on your voice. I think that's probably the best advice that I can give.
Yeah, and it's brilliant advice. Like, all that right there is brilliant, to be like, be able to take the criticism, be able to take it, be able to evolve. You got to evolve, you got to grow, you got to be able to do it, and all that just right there, brilliant work.
Well, one thing that I always think about is sort of seeing the math of a story, and when somebody points out certain things, if you have a character that you love and you're writing a story about this character, and if somebody, make sure that you can look at, by the end of this thing, did I seed all these things? Did I build this character in such a way that when we get to that moment at the end, that the audience or just you as the audience, am I invested in this character's journey? But there is a sort of a mathematical thing to it. So, being able to see it with a critical eye and be able to trust other people to see it with a critical eye and believe them when they say, because if you're all working to make the best story possible, if that's the intent, then everybody's on the same page. And, I used to think when people would give me critique that I'd be like, you don't see it. You're seeing my vision. But, like, I wasn't that good. Like, I wasn't executing the vision. I mean, of course, I remember, like, sometimes in my improv sketch group, like, sketches were, 5 to 10 minutes, and I would get very, defensive when people would want to talk about certain things, because I was so, these writings was so personal that I was, like, it was so connected, my words and my, to me and what I was thinking and feeling, and that when people had critical things to say, I was, like, well, you don't see me. Yeah. And that's like, that's writing.
Yeah.
But it's important to be able to take a step back and be able to look at your work in a critical eye, with a critical eye.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a fellow writer who's done stuff for film, I've done a few things for film, not television yet, and then also YouTube series and whatnot. Like, you have to be able to step back and take that look. If you can't step back and take that look on what you... I think you can, like, that could be used for almost everything in the creative arts, is take a step back, take a look at it. You can't, you're never like, oh, there's this thing. It's like, no, but you got to detail it. You got to find it. You got to make the curves. You can't just have a block. And you may, oh, no, you want to make it a statue. You want to you want to really find it out.
There's something too, just a life advice too, putting yourself in other people's shoes.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's, as a storyteller, you have to put yourself in a lot of different pairs of shoes in order to figure out what the story is, what it should be. I think that's another piece of good advice. You really have to find a way to be impartial and understanding and empathetic and sympathetic to the characters, so that you can really hone in on what they're about and what their stories are.
Oh, yeah. It's have to, because if you do the work, if you take that extra step, who knows where that extra step could take you? That's the thing. You never know. It could be like, oh, I took an extra step, I detailed it, and oh, I don't know what's going to happen from it. So it's a toss away project. And then you get like all these phone calls, and it's like, oh, shit. Okay, maybe it's not.
Yeah, and if you focus on those things, focus on the stories and things like that. Because I feel like with, it can be really easy to get caught up in like career things.
Yeah.
And wanting to be at a place or be seen as something. I have to say that if you focus on the work, it will be more rewarding to you. And it doesn't mean that you can't drop in and be like, okay, what am I doing with my career? Because if you want to have certain levels of success, you're going to have to do that. But if you keep your head down and focus on the work, and then when you get to a space where you, have evolved as a writer, then I just don't think it's healthy sometimes to look at career and it's how can I put this? I think social media has put this thing in people's brains that they have to just be present, especially like writers and creators, that just have to be present and doing all these other things so that everyone can see that you are that thing without actually being the thing. Mm-hmm. Sam?
Yeah, oh, I feel it. Oh, 100%.
And it's easy to give the impression, you know, you can say in your Twitter bio, I writer or whatever, and you might be one. But I think keeping your head down and doing the work and focusing on those things is more important along the way than giving the impression or maintaining the image that you are that thing. Yeah. It's more about the substance and,
Yeah, and make sure it's something you love, too. Those don't want to be like, yeah. I want to be this. Oh, you want to be, but there's also something you desire to be.
Yes, yes. And know that you will get your heart broken many times the way.
Oh, yeah.
And that will, hopefully, you'll be able to use that heartbreak in your work.
Yeah. And it's like, people are like, oh, heartbreak is the worst thing. I'm like, obviously, you've never worked in the creative arts, my friend.
I mean, like, I remember when people used to talk to me about as far as acting goes, where they would be like, just in general speaking about rejection. And, you know, it's one thing to go into like a job interview and be rejected a handful of times and then get a job. But as an actor, I've been rejected thousands of times.
Yeah.
Like thousands of times. And you have to sort of change your view of success in many ways, because otherwise you'll just be like, it'll just consume you. With writing too, you know, people put their hearts and their souls into writing something. And one bad thing that somebody says or whatever, like, can really set you off. I mean, there are things like, I should never read comments, but I do sometimes. And there will be some dummy who says something that's just rude. And I'm like, and it will sit in my brain in a very unhealthy way, because I'm like, I just put so much time and energy into creating this thing, and you clearly like didn't read it, and you're just mad that it isn't the thing that you wanted it to be. And that's not healthy for me. So I have to take a step back and being like, and be like, you know, I did what I was hired to do, and I told the story the best to my ability. You got to do it for yourself. You got to do it for yourself. Do it because you love it, and know that it will break your heart 1,000 times, but that if you love it, it will, the dividends that it will pay to you creatively, as far as also personal growth, will be great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's just, you got to stay strong, you got to evolve, you got to be able to remember why you're doing it and everything like that. And I think that can definitely be something, because as an actor, yes, there is that. So you do get the thousands of rejections, but you just have to keep rolling with it. You got to keep rolling and stay strong. And they went out there, because there's a lot of people in the creative arts who listen to the show, like people who do work in film, people who work at Marvel, DC, all these different things. And I always try to give advice to them, and then I bring people like yourself who give really damn good advice. They'd be like, hey, stay strong, stay with it, keep it going. You want to give up because it's instinct, like things get bad and you want to give up, but that's not what you want to do. You want to stay the strong. You want to make sure you have a good support system. You want to make sure you want to keep creating, because if you got the creative bug, no matter in what shape or form it is, you want to keep it with you, and it never really leaves you, but you try to bury it sometimes, and make sure you don't bury it. Make sure you keep it alive and fresh, because that's you. That's not anything. That's not like a weird thing, a mental or anything like that. It's you, I think. And that's just me, personally.
Yeah. I mean, fear, people, you know, fear is really easy to get consumed by.
Yeah.
And, for a creative person, you know, there have been stories over the years that I've been like, oh, I want to do it. Well, I can't really, I really want to tell the story, but I don't know, because I feel like if it doesn't go where I need it to be, then it's going to make me frustrated or whatever. And I would be sort of afraid of sharing certain ideas or concepts or pitches or whatever. But there are times when I've also been like, you know, I just have to be very honest about the kind of stories I want to tell. Just recently, I've been talking about doing this project with something and a very, what can I say? A cartoon from the past that mm-hmm. is really cool and really like awesome. And I who knows if it'll happen. I think it will. But one of the things that I did in pitching ideas for this was I did not hold back about what I would do with these characters. Mm-hmm. So, and normally I not normally, but in the past, because characters are not owned by me, I have to go in sometimes with the idea of like, well, how far can I do this? You know, like I know that I will get no's here. I will know that I will get no's here if I try to push too far or make the themes something that might be not jibe with the audience that they intend for the book or whatever to be about. But with this particular project, I just went with all my instincts. I was like, you know what? This is what I would do with these characters. These are what the themes would be, blah, blah, blah. And I went for it. And I was met with nothing but support. Ooh. And I was like, wow, because usually, like, there are times when I feared just putting it all out there and putting it on the line and making sort of bold choices and stating up front, I think we need to make bold choices here. And I think we need to go the distance and go beyond just whatever format that, you know, people look at this and go, oh, it's this type of book. No, we have to layer in and do things that will be able to be unique in this certain, you know, this like middle grade format. And people were like, yeah, I see it. I like it. Let's do it. And I was like, oh, okay.
Fair enough.
And there have been times when I've been very fearful of stating my full intent up front because I don't want to get the no, but you're going to get no's. You're going to get a ton of no's.
Okay.
And know that if you do put something on the line, you know, like don't know your risks, know the risks that you're taking. That's something that you'll learn over time, what is risky and what is not. But don't be afraid to go bold, go big, or go home.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really about it. That works. Oh, that's, yeah, it's the truth. You gotta do it because you just go home.
Yeah.
Oh, and you don't want to go home.
No. Stay.
Yeah, yeah. We want you to stay in the arts. Come on, focus at home. Don't go home, because you go home, then that's a whole level of self issues you do not want.
Like, yeah.
No. So I'm curious here, if we kind of move on a little bit, right? Because that's really fucking good stuff right there. Like, realize that, like, help me out a little bit. Is you've done both Marvel and DC.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you like a little bit more? Like, do you have a favorite? Or
I don't. I think that universes are different. I mean, you know, the thing about DC and Marvel and superhero stuff in general is that there's a lot of nostalgia tied to my love of writing these characters. And over the past few years, I've really tried to pick apart and because a lot of people just, and I've noticed this in politics, religion, popular culture, people's ties to nostalgia can be very unhealthy.
Ooh,
and
yes.
And they don't understand just how unhealthy, because they never take a step back to really look at why they like the things that they like. And they don't like to be told the only reason that you like this is because you grew up with it and it brings you comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of the culture is based around, hey, remember that thing? Well, we're doing it again. and we are all very used to it because, I mean, even just you look at people's movie slates and companies who own things go, what do we have that people know? What is like a name that we can just relaunch, you know, like Adam's Family or whatever? Like, there's always something.
Mm.
And it brings people comfort in some ways. For me, Marvel and DC both do have roots in nostalgia for me. But there is something really inspirational about superhero themes. Excuse me. And the things that I, the kind of stories that I tell for younger readers, I really try to hone in on the things that I valued as a kid in terms of, you know, the support system and the themes of that I love, that I connected to, that were positive and inspirational, and about having friendships and, you know, being there for one another and, you know, little things like that. Cause I do like a lot of chapter book stuff.
Yeah.
And I love both Marvel and DC. I don't want to say equally, but yeah, equally. They're just different. They're different universes. They offer different things. And I don't really pit them. Everyone always thinks it's like a cop out that I'm like, I don't really pit them against each other. But I really don't. I like them in different. I like them for different reasons because they both offer up different things.
It's true. Yeah, and as an equalist, I'm with you because people have always. Just lately, everyone's like, oh no, DC's better than that, or Marvel's better than that. And I'm like, why can't we just love it all? Like, come on, just love everybody, love all comics.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I will say that I grew up watching cartoons like the Justice League, or Super Friends, Justice League, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and then the X-Men cartoon. Like, these were all things, Batman the Animated Series, these are all things that had a huge impact in the way that I... consumed superheroes and superhero stories, and so, you know, those are embedded in my brain. I mean, now it's funny to you watch some of these things and you go, oh, the quality of the thing. I was just reading, there was a book previously on X-Men, which is like this very thick book about the making of the X-Men cartoon.
Oh damn.
And it was really interesting to read, you know, because the people that were making it were like my age now then, and you just read about how their approach. I'm always interested to know how people approach storytelling, and especially when you're dealing with something like this animated series and how it came together in this certain way. You know, how did they look at the stories? What did they do? What were the sort of, again, like picking apart the equation of it, you know, as they put it together, was really fascinating to me. And yeah, I have a feeling that we'll see a new X-Men cartoon, sooner rather than later.
Oh, I'll bet money on that. Cash money. I bet my damn tax returns just now, like, bet money that we will see, especially with Disney at the lead right now too. And come on, as soon as Dark Phoenix is over.
I read this article, just like a couple of days ago that was an interview with Court Lane, who is the Marvel animation guy.
Yes.
And they were asking him about stuff that's like coming up, and he was like, we'll be doing something that hasn't been an animated show for a really long time that we're really excited about. And I was like, it's got to be X-Men, and it'll give it just enough time. They'll put out an X-Men cartoon for a few years, and then down the road, they'll put them in the movies. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like if you're going to do a new thing, especially one that they said hadn't been on television in a long time, I'm like, that's X-Men.
Got to be. Well, there's a couple others it could be. It could be another Fantastic Four series or Iron Man, but I'm hoping X-Men.
Yeah, Fantastic Four. That's interesting.
Yeah, remember there was that one. There was Fantastic. No, something Heroes. I think it was. I watched it as a kid growing up. It was.
There were some janky Marvel cartoons in the 90s that I like. Remember being like, I'm gonna watch this, and then I was like, oh, this is weird. And I remember the Fantastic Four one was kind of oddball.
Oh yeah.
There's a Hulk one, too, and a Silver Surfer, maybe?
Yeah, the one I'm thinking of, The Amazing Heroes, was in 2005 or 2006, I think. So this one's...
Was it Japanese animated?
Yeah, it was an anime sort of thing.
Okay.
And it was on Nickelodeon, though. It was like on that... When Nickelodeon had the two different shows, for people who may not know, there was two different Nickelodeon channels back in the day. There was like a...
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was like a Teen Nick sort of thing where it had like Iron Amazing Adventures Iron Man. Like Iron Man's a younger kid. They had Fantastic Four on there. The Amazing Heroes. And a couple other kind of like teenager cartoons where things could get dark sometimes. Like they had that Wolverine and X-Men was on that one. That's where that one premiered on. And so you had like the regular Nickelodeon and another Nickelodeon. And so, like, that one. So I think I'm like, I really want a damn X-Men cartoon, but I'm like, oh, wait, it could be Fantastic Four.
That's actually, I hadn't really truly considered that.
I feel like I just popped your bubble, though.
Well, I'm okay with, like, you know, after this sort of Fox acquisition, I'm okay letting characters not show up for a few years. Like, I think we have to miss them a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's okay to not want to just, like, throw people in there right away. Although I think the Fantastic Four would be the most natural ones to integrate individually or you know, through other films if they wanted to, instead of just launching with a Fantastic Four movie. I think that, you know, you can put a Reed Richards somewhere, you can put a Sue Storm somewhere, you can put those characters in there, and we don't have to go through the origin again, unless, you know, and then if they wanted to do a Fantastic Four movie, you know, it can be told in flashbacks or whatever, but that's a whole other bag. That's a whole other ball of wax.
Oh yeah, for Fantastic Four, definitely. And you worked on them a little bit back when, and I'm wondering, because we all have our little thing that we think is the best, and what do you think, Brandon, would be that one thing of yours that you're like, because you even just mentioned before, is put inspiration in, put in a little bit of childhood in there, and what do you think would be what you think was the best version of that? Like, what character do you think, or storyline from Marvel DC that you think really did that, really encapsulated what you're really trying to go for, that you're just the most proudest of?
Oh, wait, that I have written, that was what? You're talking about, like, sort of inspiration?
Yeah, well, the thing that you are the most proud of that you've written. Like, a character storyline, or, like, what story series or anything like that that you think put everything you talked about that you try to put in to a story or anything, like, or a character, and you think it worked out the best. Like, you think you're just really the proudest of it.
Oh, wow. Gosh. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I have to, like, be... I'm proud of everything that I've done, like, individually, just because... but I don't know that I've ever really, like, picked it, like, thought about that in a deep way. I mean, there are always deeper things that I try to layer in, even for younger audiences. Mm. And with the Infinity War Cosmic Quest series, you know, there are themes about trauma and overcoming trauma and sort of surviving trauma that if you were to look at it, you'd read it, you'd be like, oh, well, this is fun or whatever. Hmm. But there are things in there that are a little bit deeper that I hope that a kid, a young reader would connect to, even not, you know, not saying that a kid who's gone through significant trauma or something is going to be like, oh my gosh, that character's me. But, you know, on a big scale or a little scale, like, just understanding that, like, you know, how to move through things. I mean, I would say that, gosh, it's an interesting question.
I know I kind of stumped you a little bit here.
I would say those Infinity War things I'm very proud of. Mm-hmm. But even just, like, the chapter books that I've done for Justice League and for Wonder Woman, putting simple moments in there that sort of show characters' compassion, mm-hmm. I think is really important. There's a moment in one of the Wonder Woman chapter books where, you know, Cheetah has tried to hurt Wonder Woman and destroy her, and Wonder Woman saves her life and still extends her hand to Cheetah. And Cheetah is like, why are you doing this? Like, she doesn't understand it. And we get you get the sense that, like, you know, despite all these things, like, Wonder Woman is still very pure hearted and she is not there to, she sees the redemptive value in people. Mm-hmm. And that I think is really important, to express, or, you know, to put in books for younger readers.
Oh yeah. Are you kidding? Yeah, in all honesty, 100%, because you need stuff like that, to, especially younger readers who see it, and hopefully they see it. If not, maybe they go back and they see it later on, and it helps form them into better people, because the world needs a little bit better people out there. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely would like that. And so I think it starts with literature. I think it starts with the arts. I think it starts with that. So, like Wonder Woman right there, that's a step one, or that's a baby step, whatever. Like, it's the early steps there to be, here's how we make better people, and here's how we make a better world, and that's with this.
It's very, it's a hero, finding the ways to tell superhero stories where they're acting like heroes, but there's also a human element, because we can't just see them be powerful physically and save people. We have to give them a challenge here and there where we get to see their philosophy on heroism in palatable ways for younger readers without hitting them over the head. And one of those things are just the smaller moments of like, and then it's hard sometimes to not, depending upon the age group, to not try to hit, to not hit readers over the head with like the lesson. You kind of have to do that when you're dealing with a tiny, small kids, and maybe like a picture book or something along those lines. But the chapter book, they're starting to graduate, so you're not going to go at the end and be like, well, and here's a lesson, and ha ha ha. So finding subtle ways to get positive messaging into books, I think comes through in the tiny character moments that we get to see, and the way the characters and heroes react to certain elements.
And just those little seeds can plant a big tree sometimes, you know?
Absolutely,
Oh yeah.
absolutely.
And it's really, you've done some amazing work, and he being able to hear from you, Brandon, like what you put into your series, what you put into your books, and what you try to do for the world and for people is truly an inspiring and amazing thing. I just want to say that because I get people on here sometimes, they're like, oh, we do it because it's a childhood fan service, and you're like, no, I'm gonna do it because let's put some good in there. Let's put some really good shit in the world.
Well, I just, I appreciate that. And also, sometimes it's funny because it's easy to take a kid's book and look at it and be like, oh, kids' books. I mean, if I go on on a certain website where people can buy books and review them, or not review them, just comment, basically, people will often say like, oh, this book is for kids. And I'm like, yeah, it is for kids. Like, I know that you bought it as an adult man because you like Batman, but that doesn't mean that it is for you. It is for a younger reader. So you might see it as juvenile because you're 35, but it was written for an 8-year-old. So,
It's
and
written for
sometimes
teenagers.
people really think of that as and like say negative things, and it's like, I crafted that for a child. And so that's why you don't like it. But yeah, I you have to do all those things. You can't just treat the material and treat the age group. You have to respect them. And so I do try to do as much as I can to create something that will be received well by a kid. I mean, when a kid tells me that they like a book, that's all I need. And I've had kids say to me with some of the chapter books, with I remember one time I was at a show and a girl came up to my table, or actually no, this was she was in like a young adult, but she worked at Barnes and Noble, and she was talking to me about the chapter books, and she's like, oh my God, I read one of your books, I have one of it, one of your books. And then she described like a very specific moment in it that I was like, oh my gosh, like, you see it. Like, you see, you got that little thing that I layered in there that was like just a tiny moment of sort of positive messaging, and you picked it up and you saw it. And like, those are the things that I love the most, is talking to readers who like see those things and call them out, never knowing that I put those specific things in there as like tiny positive messaging moments. And that's like a really big deal to me, because when you see somebody affected by your work, it gives it gives me a lot of strength, and it makes me feel like what I'm doing is the right thing for me to be doing.
And they acknowledge the work, and whenever your work is acknowledged, and especially the fine little detailed points in it, like we talked about earlier, you look and you're like, yes. Like, you see it, you see the vision, you see what's going on here, and you see what's trying to happen. And like, And she's probably sitting there just like, who, like, she's like, I see it and whatnot. So she understands, like, what you're trying to do and whatnot. Because I think if, because you have the ability here to hit them, hit kids with these characters. Oh, that sounds terrible. But you have the ability to go at younger audiences and see and give them something great, something to look forward to and whatnot. So, like, regular comics, kids may be reading that much of them, you know, like certain kids and whatnot. It's starting to change now because of movies and stuff. But you'll be able to go in there with the books that you do, and you can go in with, like, characters like Avengers and Justice League, and kids are like, yes, and you can help form the stuff that we have as comic book readers, or that we get, be able to form it at a younger age, and who knows the possibilities of that. That's what I love about that. It's endless possibilities of, here's a little bit of Goody Planet at a young age. Cool. Where can that go? Endless multiverse there. Endless.
Yeah.
Oh,
possibilities are a good thing.
Oh my god, and kind of possibilities on here too is that you've done a lot of work. Then what's next? Like what do you want to do, Brandon? Like what do you want to do that's on your dream project slate? And if it's already being worked on, don't talk about it because we don't want to get you in trouble.
Well, there, you know, I have a lot of ideas. I have a lot of stories. And it's been difficult for me at times to really hone in on the answer to that question when I feel overwhelmed with which of these things do I want to tell first? And also to have opportunities come my way, you know, like this Infinity War Cosmic Quest series, like I can't say no to that. So in the past few years, I've been putting a lot of my personal original graphic novel and comic book stuff to the side because I've had these other opportunities come my way, and you know, also like I need to make money. So if somebody says, "Hey, do you want to do this thing?" and it's like, "Yeah, I can't say no to an Infinity War series. I can't say no to Batman books, and not just because like of nostalgic reasons. It's like, no, I love this. I love doing those. Yeah. So either I find a way to make those work, or I don't. And so I always find a way to work, but just in the past few years, or just in the past like year, I'm in the process of doing some original stuff that's been on my mind for a while. So the next thing for me, will be focusing on that. But at the same time, I found a way. I mean, I work a lot, and sometimes I don't have a ton of time, but I always know how to find time to do the things that I love. So like there will be more stuff from Marvel from me, and there will be more stuff from DC. One thing that I have to say that in terms of DC stuff that I have coming down the pike that I'm really excited about, Capstone does chapter books. And the Batman ones that I've done before, I had a couple come out earlier this year that were cool, but I'm doing two more of them, and they're basically Batman paired with another hero. And so the ones that I did before were Robin. One was a Robin, one was a Nightwing.
Okay.
This time around, I'm very excited that I'm doing two more, one of the stories pairs Batman with Batwoman.
Ooh.
And the other pairs him with Batwing. And this is the first time that they're going to be done in the Batman animated style in a book.
Oh, damn it. That's so damn cool. I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, one, we get Batwing back. I love Batwing. And two, I love Batwoman. Like, she...
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see the visuals, but also to present these characters, you know, in this world working alongside Batman. I just think is a really important thing for, you know, I think it's important to tell inclusive stories, and I'm really excited to just be able to like put Luke Fox in a world fighting, I won't give away the villain, but fighting, you know, very well-known Batman villain, have Luke alongside Batman. It just has a lot of great possibilities.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You have so many, and here the Batwing's coming back. Cause I was always a fan of Batwing. That's amazing. And being able to take on that character, and it's just, now you got me flabbergasted because I'm like, yes.
Well, with Batwoman too, it's like, you know, I used to love guest. I mean, I'm a huge fan of guest stars. Like when I was a kid and I would watch like Super Friends, and there would be like, they would do these like short ones where it was like, and this one's guest starring the Fly. I loved like a guest star. I loved a cameo. And so for this one to have Kate Kane, you know, Bruce Wayne's cousin sort of show up, like that's always like a cool sort of like, oh, because if you're a kid and you don't know who that is, when you open it up and you're like, okay, the beginning of the story is Batman, you know, Bruce Wayne's cousin coming to visit, you're like, okay, what is this about? And then all of a sudden there's trouble and they become their superhero alter egos. You're going to be like, wait, what? Because like little kids probably do not know about Batwoman.
No. Oh no.
So to see this seemingly casual character, interaction with Bruce Wayne turn into, oh my gosh, two superheroes, like two bat people. Like I'm hoping for that sort of like, I don't know, not light bulb moment, but that exciting moment where they turn the page and it's like, wait, she's a superhero too?
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm trying to capture, that sort of magic of discovery.
Oh yeah, and I think it'll show. And it's Batwoman, so people, you're going to get the little girls there who are going to be, like, or the younger teenage girls, whatever it may be, and they're going to be like, there's a Batwoman? Like,
yes,
not just Batgirl? Yes. Like, no.
And Luke Fox is going to be on that show as well.
Oh.
I don't know that he will be Batwing on it. The kind of weird sort of timing of getting approved to do those two characters, and being like, oh, I totally didn't think about it when I was putting those pitches together that both of those characters were going to be on Batwoman, but they are. So that's, the timing is good.
Okay, it's going to work out very well, to say the least. Oh, shoot. Well, that's, what, do you have any idea when those might be available?
Those will be out next year. I think the beginning of next year.
Ah, okay. Oh, you got my hopes up for a lot.
I know. I mean, that's another thing, too, where people will be like, oh, when is something? I'm like, oh, that's not going to be out for a couple years. There are two other things that I'm working on right now that won't be out until, one will be out next summer, and then I think the other one will be the following year. There's a series that Penguin does called Who Is, that is about, it's like a New York Times bestselling series. It's about historical figures, and sort of like famous, it can be anyone from like George Washington to like, you know, a football player or a mathematician or, you know, historical figures, and pop culture people as well. Bob Marley was one, and they're doing a spinoff series called What Is the Story Of? And they're basically biographies. So the What Is the Story Of? Are biographies of fictional characters. You know, the history of their creation and how they've changed over the years in print and also in pop culture. And so I'm doing two books for that series. What Is the Story of Princess Leia? And What Is the Story of Black Panther?
Well, I mean, if you just want to hit two giant fandoms with a stick,
yeah, you do. Well, I know. That's a lot of pressure to make sure that, like, all the, you know, to get all the aspects right. And these are for, you know, these are for 8-year-olds.
Yeah.
So one of the things that is really important is, like, being able to take the immense, you know, with Star Wars and Princess Leia in particular, like taking the immense history and minutiae of this world and this character and her place in it and being able to put it into a filter for a younger reader, and making sure that you hit all the right notes when it comes to, you know, who she is, who she was, who she's become, and finding all of the really positive and you know, aspects of her character. You know, she's been a rebel, she's been a princess, she's like, she's been a general, she's led, she's, you know, there's all these different facets to this character. So finding all those things, and with Black Panther as well, you know, there's a lot of historical context that you want to be able to mention in. So how do you talk about some of the bigger picture things with civil rights and Black Panther's place, and then the success of the film, and the creators that have told stories, Black Panther stories, and how you know, the things that they put into his stories that were controversial at the time. So how do you find a way to do that and be honest with an 8-year-old about the immensity of these characters, while just making it understandable for the audience? It's a big challenge, and I'm really grateful that I had that opportunity.
Yeah, and I think you're up for the challenge, to say the least.
Yeah, well,
we'll see. Yeah, there was so much stress when that just came in out of that reaction. They're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it has been very stressful too. But yeah, other than that, I have a couple things that are in the works. Hopefully there will be some announcements in the next couple months.
Okay.
That will be, you know, it'll keep me busy for a while.
That's true. And to help you keep you busy, tell folks what they can go pick up and where they can go pick it up at.
So, you can find me on social media as Brandon T. Snyder, Twitter and Instagram, and I have a Facebook author page as well. If you are looking for my books, you can go to my website, which is cootiekid.com, CootieKid.com. And I'll just tell you where that comes from. I used to get made fun of. I was bullied as a kid. And so Cootie, I became Cootie Kid. I was like the new kid in school. This nasty girl said that I had cooties. And then everyone called me Cootie Kid. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make that my website. Show them.
That is amazing.
I've turned a negative into a positive.
That is brilliant.
I've also been developing a Cootie Kid book series sort of that's based on elements of my own life that, it's been something that I get really hot on working on, and then I have to take a step back because, to be quite honest, like, I didn't have a great elementary school life. Mm-hmm. So having to sort of confront a lot of things that I dealt with as a kid, getting bullied and stuff, has been difficult. So there are times when I get into the nitty gritty and I'm like, you know what, I have to put this aside. I'll come back to this. So Cootie Kid, the book series, will probably happen at some point in my life, but we'll see. I don't know when.
That's a true test of character and inner strength right there. Because you did mention anxiety and stuff like that before, and as a guy who suffers that as well, and I know everyone listens, but I'm like, ah, bull. Like, no, it's true. And be able to just go out there and be like, you know what? This is like, and it's almost, that's gotta be almost therapeutical, though, for Cootie Kid.
And of course. Writing is healing.
Oh, yes.
And when I talk to younger readers, and when I do school visits and stuff, I always say, you know, writing out how you feel, and you know, if you want to keep a diary or things like that, like, it is very therapeutic, and writing is a healing for me. So when I can put certain personal things into the lives of fictional characters, it helps me, you know, get through things that I need to deal with.
Yeah, it makes you a better person, and then hopefully maybe people will see it, make them a better person and whatnot. So it's all a cycle.
That's the hope.
Oh, man. And so definitely, people, go check out CootieKid.com. Go check it out and purchase some of Brandon's work because, one, I'm excited beyond belief to see what else you got coming out down the pipeline and see what else you can do to help change the world, which is kind of what you're doing. So, which is really cool.
Baby steps.
Yes. It all, quite literally, it all starts the love with baby steps. It all really does, no matter what you're doing. And definitely want to say thank you, Brandon, for coming on. It's been a blast having you on.
Thanks, Dakota. I had a good time.
Thank you. And hopefully people, listeners at home, hopefully you guys take a conversation that we had and take it to your life and take it to what you want to do. And hopefully you guys also go to cootiekid.com for Brandon. But and just take it and do what you want to do, do what you love, and make sure you take that step back and take a look at it and detail it and fine print it and accept criticism and accept all those other things about it, because it's always about evolving. So you always got to evolve and move forward. You can't just stay in your place and just stay there your entire life. You got to take that step forward. Take that baby step forward. Slowly but surely. Or run fast, but that's rough. But, and quite literally, running is rough. But,
it's true.
Oh, yeah. So, just do that. And to everyone listening, I want to say thank you guys. And we want to say also, wherever you're listening, leave us a review or a comment. Make sure you guys subscribe to wherever you're listening as well, too. It helps. And if you want to follow, what was your Twitter handle again?
It's just Brandon T. Snyder.
Okay. Yeah, go follow Brandon on Twitter at Brandon T. Snyder. And if you guys want to stay tuned with Comic Chronicle Podcast, you can do it at Real Fan Corp on Twitter, Instagram, and Fan Corp Network on Facebook and YouTube. And if you want to follow me and my adventures in theater, film, podcasting, all this other stuff, then you can follow me at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter and at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. Try to post some adventures and motivational stuff and whatnot for people usually daily. Try to, at least. And because life gets crazy and hectic. So definitely, folks, check it out. And, Bren, any final words?
love them.
That's brilliant. I do love, like, there's so much to that. People are like, that's simple. Like, to some of us, we're like, we're going to shed a tear because it's so true.
If you love someone, if you appreciate what they do and who they are, tell them.
Amen to that. Amen to that. All right, everybody. Stay classy, Avengers.